How's it? My name is Rechot, and you are listening to The Best in Tech, the podcast where we talk about, you guessed it, only the best in technology. This week, I'm sitting with Thibaut Dusson, the GM for Southern Africa at Lenovo. How's it, Dusson? How are you doing?
Very well, and yourself?
Good, good, good.
Excellent.
We're going to be chatting about Lenovo and lots of cool technology right after this. So, ThinkPad, IBM, Lenovo, these brands have been, I've been playing with them for a very long time. I remember my ThinkPad when I was still a old school hack, old school journalist, you know, typing away on that thing. Absolutely phenomenal devices. Lenovo then bought out IBM's ThinkPad range. And since then, we've seen some really incredible innovations. And I'm looking at your Lenovo Yoga tablet over there, which we'll talk about just now. Can you talk to us a little bit about Lenovo in South Africa and kind of, you know, where you guys are at the moment?
Well, Lenovo South Africa is a fairly a nice size company. It's about 50 people. We are currently number two in the market in terms of PC shipment per year. Very dynamic young team that we have. We specialize in three different type of product at the moment, which is PC, that you know well, obviously, the ThinkPad's coming from it. And then we have the mobile phone with Motorola, which is part of the Lenovo stable. And then we have what we call the data center group, which we bought the server business from IBM 2 years ago, which we actually sell into South Africa as well.
Oh, fantastic. I'm sure that must be quite in high demand. I mean, the quality of the product in a server environment.
Well, it's quite nice is to have a one-stop shop for the customers that we have. They're obviously looking for mobility, so Motorola is there, as well as some of the tablets and mobile computers that we sell. Mm. But there's a huge demand, obviously, to get the data center in place, and that's where the data center group comes in. So it gives us a nice opportunity to give a complete flavor of IT equipment to our partners and customers.
So let's talk a little bit about you and your history. I'm always interested in finding out who the person is behind the title.
Shame.
What is your heritage? What is your background?
Well, my background, basically, I'm French, so I've got a cheese background. I came to South Africa about 14 years ago. I was working at the time for a competitor that actually brought me to the country, and I was supposed to be here for 2 years, and then I fell in love with the country, so basically stayed. I'm now completely, fully South African, if you can say it that way. My background in technology, where I started basically in the logistics side of things. I was responsible for product quality, and I came into this country because there was a factory that was manufacturing PCs, and they needed my expertise for quality. So that was basically my background: all logistic, all quality production control, etc., etc. And then, you know, like anything else in life, you have to go and have a look at sales and marketing and finance and all through that. I became very involved in the country, very involved in the IT industry, and you know.
Has it always been with Lenovo?
No, it was with Hewlett Packard before that for 14 years, and I've been with Lenovo for about 2 years now.
Okay. So you've got. I mean, being with HP gives you a lot of in-depth insights into the industry.
Yes, very much so. And it was quite interesting because at the time when I arrived in 2004, the industry was booming. So after the huge increase of IT demand before 2000 because of the Y2K bugs, a lot of people sold but nothing happened. There was a little bit of a dip in the market, but then at 2004 things started to go very well. I mean, the IT industry was basically growing at 25-30% year on year. And I think at its glory days, the IT industry went to about 2.2 million units sold per year in South Africa, and South Africa only. So it was really, really an exciting time. So there was an economic downturn, financial crash in the world. Yep. So it kind of like tempered the GDP growth in the country. And then, but not only because of that, you would see as well the the coming of new technology like tablets, like smartphones. And now all of a sudden, people, instead of using their PC, a laptop or desktop, starting to use other pieces of technology to access the internet. And this is where you see that the PC growth in South Africa, but in the world in a way, kind of like went down a little bit. And we are now in 2017, and we're looking at anything between 1.2, 1.3 million units still being sold into the country on the PC side of the business. So quite a lot smaller than what it used to be. But it's a constant business. It doesn't really disappear. It's completely mature now. So, three major players that owns more than 80% of the market in South Africa, being HP, Dell, and Lenovo.
Now, if you look at the split between notebooks and PCs, desktop PCs, I mean, do you see a trend where businesses, the corporate that still use desktops, moving away from that? I mean, we're getting, I mean, what other technology are they taking up if they're not going the notebook route?
No, it's still desktop, still, you know, it used to decline quite a bit. Funny enough, in 2006, I think you could see that notebook took over desktop in terms of volume in South Africa. But it's still important for some of our customers. So you're looking at the banks, you're looking at some Department of Education, some financial institution. They want the data to stay in-house, and they can't really secure a notebook as much as they want to. So they like to have a desktop. It's a little bit easier to secure, and it's a little bit easier to manage as well.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, it really is about security rather than, I mean, that's a computer that needs to stay in one place, and you don't want the data to be compromised.
So if you for instance have a call center, what happens usually is they have a huge screen, and then mounted in the back is the desktop. They obviously don't want the data to leave the office. They don't need that that portability that salespeople would use, for instance. So desktop here still has a big place and a prominent place in those businesses.
Now, if we look at some of the Lenovo, because let's be honest, notebook tech is the most fun. I mean, desktop tech, I mean, for gamers, yes, I can
could
see
be
the
fun.
Value. Yeah, there's a lot of fun in it, but for us serious mobile warriors, a high-spec notebook is still much better than and I said in inverted quotes, a clunky desktop. But talk to us a little bit about some of the Lenovo, the latest Lenovo notebooks that gets you excited. I mean, the X1 is still a big part of the range, you know?
Yes, the X1 is obviously our flagship.
And that is a fantastic device.
It's absolutely beautiful. I mean, I remember because I used to work for the competition, and that was the only laptop that used to scare me when I used to go and sell against it. But it is a magnificent machine. What we see more and more, and technology for me, that's what is important. It's here to solve a problem. So as long as people have issues, there will be new technology to try to solve those issues. So if you look at the portability that we talked about, you know, if you look at your laptops 10 years ago, if you get 3 hours battery life out of it, it was basically the max. All right. So now you can get up to 10, 12 hours battery life without a problem in one charge.
That's fantastic.
And which is great. Access to information is important. Boot up time is important. So with the solid state drive, you actually get your boot up time under 5 seconds into Windows 10. Fantastic. Again, a new technology that the laptop brought in. And then is the versatility of everything. So you'll see that in 2006, 2007, when the tablets arrive into the market, fantastic, people love it, but then realize fairly quickly that it's quite hard to create with it. And it's quite funny because if you go into meeting rooms now, business meetings, 5 years ago, a lot of people had their tablets and trying to take notes on it. And now it's completely disappeared.
Yeah, people don't do that anymore.
People don't do that anymore. So now we're trying to integrate that technology into our PC. So now our PC's got a 360 degrees tent mode, in a way.
That's the yoga range,
which
right?
is the yoga range, exactly. Where you can basically use your notebooks as a tablet or as a, if you will, a complete a projection system by putting in a
screen only like device.
Yeah, yeah. So it gives you that versatility and it gives you a little bit more than what you buy for. So it's pretty cool.
Now, when you compare the uptake of something like that, I mean, a lot of people would look at it and say, maybe do I need something like that? Because there's obviously a premium on that technology, I would compare to other devices in the market. What are some of the feedbacks? I mean, have you seen anything in a practical implementation where people go, this has made a difference in my life in this industry?
Well, yes. So the tent mode, for instance, if you go on the plane and you've got absolutely no space and you still want to watch, a movie that is not forced on you by the airline,
it's actually quite a nice functionality
to have. The tablet, some people still use it to take notes. So that gives you a little bit more flexibility as well. And then the workhorse of a notebook to be able to create, to be able to take notes, to send email, et cetera, to go on Excel, to start doing some macros. And that still is. So, in a way, you've got three devices in one. Mm. So, if you are somebody that travels a lot and that obviously need access to information fairly quickly and need to be able to create and connect it to the world, yes, it makes a lot of sense. If obviously, you only need access to the internet at home, then in that case, I will say to you, then go for the desktop.
Something
that you can get a bigger screen with.
I don't think a lot of people these days, the market for computers and technology today is certainly somebody that's going to opt towards mobility, because we're not stationary people. We don't stay in one place, live in one place, work in one place. In fact, a lot of the workforce, a lot of creative people want to be mobile. You can work from anywhere. That kind of angle has always been very appealing for having the technology to drive it. But now I'm looking at this ThinkPad, and I'm noticing that the red thumbstick, and I just remembered, like, it's still there. And I remember using that thing back in the day. But why would Lenovo keep something like that? It seems old.
It's almost a symbol that you see on some of the cars, right? We don't want to get rid of it. It's part of our legacy. It's 25 years of ThinkPad this year. So we basically made about 100 million of them worldwide. Wow. Now, if you look at the trackpad, that basically got created from the start. And that what was differentiating the IBM laptops to your Compaq or your Toshiba, which were the three brands who launched laptop at the same time. And I think it's stay there. I mean, some of the people that work with me at Lenovo cannot work with anything else than a trackpad. So I guess if we were about to take that out, we'll probably have a big problem on our hands. Yeah.
It's certainly from any brand's point of view, it's nice to have something that's unique to you that people love and that they continue to use.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's what makes a general technology product set it apart from an iconic technology product. And we're talking about 25 years of Lenovo. I mean, that's an incredible long time for any technology manufacturer.
For any brand technology.
Yeah, to be producing a range of products.
Which was actually quite funny is that there's a bit of an anecdote towards that little red button. Is that at the time, IBM marketing design didn't allow to have a red button, because red button for the IBM design means that it's an emergency button. So the guys actually created and did the design of the first IBM ThinkPad. Basically told the marketing people that it wasn't red, it was magenta, and they basically gave the code color for magenta. But then through the different reiteration of the design, it became redder and redder and redder, but still basically pretended to the marketing people that it wasn't red. And that's how he got around it.
They snuck it through. Fantastic.
They basically snuck it through.
It's very iconic. I mean, if you look at the ThinkPad logo with the little red dot on there, I mean, it's part of what the brand is.
It is.
But now, notebook technologies, I mean, I'm a big fan. I use it. I don't know how I live without my notebook. I mean, my life is on there. I do everything I possibly can. But my requirement is top of the range. I need lots of memory, fast hard drive, and a good processor, because I do a lot of video editing. When we look at the ThinkPad range, especially the X1, where you get this amazing form factor and you have all that power under the hood, you obviously have to compete with, the likes of Apple. It's a different platform, different operating system, but you're still competing for the high-end market. When you look at those two and you compare them in the market, what are some of the challenges you see for a PC-based notebook manufacturer?
Well, you got to keep relevant to technology, right? Mm-hmm. And basically give what people want to receive. So we in a bit of a pickle at Lenovo, because the X1 Carbon is such an icon in terms of quality. You got to keep on reinventing yourself and basically not disappoint. Because that could be the worst part that can happen to us, right? I obviously you using a completely different type of fruit as a
different,
as a laptop, but you know, the X1 has got its own range of customers, very much corporate look and feel, and a lot of our big corporates in South Africa actually use it, and a lot of C-level executives use it as well. I guess Apple's got a different place in the business world. I mean, a lot of graphic designers actually use it. There are some C-level executives as well that do enjoy bringing the Apple at work, even though the CIOs and IT department usually don't really like it because it's quite hard to manage. But it's two different type of laptop, different type of technology, and really? I guess there are some people that like Apple better, and then some people like the ThinkPad better. I think there's space for.
There's definitely space for everybody, but the conversations I hear among my friends and creatives and executives and those guys, these days it's less about, I guess, the operating system. It's more about the power and the overall functionality of the device that you buy. So if you can't perform your job function on your notebook, you know, whether it's something that's ultra-portable, high-resolution screen, obviously good specs, the race is still there. The race is still to get just, give me the most power, most battery life, in the small form factor, something that's going to make my life easier, but I want everything under the hood. Mm-hmm. What are some of the things that you guys are working on that we can look forward to perhaps in this race? Because we know processing power is one of them.
Yes, so for processing power, even though a little bit less now than it used to be in the past, and I guess it's because of the SSD drive, because now access to information is a lot faster. So some people will actually go to a Core i5 rather than a Core i7 just because of battery consumption. It's a lot better, and it's a lot less overheat as well for some of the system that's out there. But I think the race is still on battery life. I still, you know, from a battery point of view, if you can get a week rather than 2 days, even better. You don't never have to get your charger with you. And so that's still something that we're working on. I'm guessing flexible display will probably be a technology to have a look at, just because of space and you know, having the possibility to have to still have a fairly decent size screens, but when you fold everything up, to be a little bit smaller, so taking a little bit less space in your bag.
So you're saying you could potentially have a larger screen, like, you know, 17-inch notebooks are not a thing anymore. It used to be a thing.
You hardly find them.
You don't find them anymore. But it would be amazing from a mobile user's point of view to have access to the same form factor or small form factor of a 15-inch, but a larger screen device. Are you saying that that's kind of on the pipeline?
Well, you know, I can't tell you what's in the pipeline because I'm not really allowed to. But I mean, if I was in R&D and if I was looking at what new technology can bring, flexible display will definitely be something I would look at.
Be on top of your list.
Yes, I will be on top of my list, as well as projection, as well as security, and so on and so forth. So there's still a lot of cables in our life, and I can see it in the room. I'm talking to you. We've got a few cables in front of us.
Yeah.
I've got state-of-the-art technology in this room, and yet still a lot of cables to try to project, to try to connect, etc., etc. I guess the future will be cableless. So the more technology we can bring in the workplace where we can actually get rid of all of it, the better it will be.
Yeah, for sure. But that's largely a chipset manufacturer's responsibility, right? They need to have the tech that makes everything communicate effortlessly.
There's a lot of that. There's a lot of new technology that can come up, like Wi-Fi or WiDi, that allows you to be completely cableless. And then there's obviously the wireless charging cable technology that should come up fairly quickly. So yeah. I mean, there's quite a few things that, you know, when you think about it now, small changes can actually help to make your life a little bit better. Is something that the manufacturers needs to think of, right?
Yeah, for sure. But I guess with all of these things, you know, you're always competing with space inside a computer. You, like we've seen stuff that Apple's done when they remove a component that's much loved, like the 3.5mm jack. It's difficult to make these jumps in technology if you as a brand isn't... If you as a brand don't want to make that leap and make a big difference and alienate your customers.
Brands have to take risk. But I've got a good... I've got a great story on this one. I remember when I first arrived in 2004, we the manufacturing facilities I was looking after, we were doing desktop. And those desktop have floppy drives, those 3.5 millimeters of floppy drive. And we thought to ourselves, okay, we can save $5-7 to the customer to take those drives out. And we did that. 6 months later, we had to put them back on because it was a disaster. I mean, people were complaining wholeheartedly that we took the floppy drive away. Now, remember those floppy drives only have, I think, 1.5 megs of data.
We call them stiffies in South Africa.
Yes, imagine. Stiffies, yeah. So you've got to be careful when you jump the leap on the technology. And I still believe that iPhone, when they took away that 3.5 millimeter jack, made a mistake. Mm. You know, I'm not happy. I was a user. I was like, oh, well, I can't do that. So I switch, and that's why my phone's got one now.
Yeah, yeah. Look, you can argue it. You know, if you want to be proactive with these things as a company, but certain tech, you just can't let go of. I mean, it's the last analog input into a device. You know, exactly. After that, it's all sealed. Mm. And it, unfortunately, I mean, I think in the stiffy drive example, you know, that was a very much a standard of transferring data at the time. We didn't really have USB flash drives back then. Mm. I remember the first 1 meg USB flash drive. Or 2 meg, I think it was, and it blew my mind.
Well, before that was DVD writer. I mean, CD writer.
Oh yeah.
That's how you went from the floppy drive to CD writer. So we all have our CD writer on the side, and that's basically how we started to make the floppy drive completely obsolete. The problem is that people had information on those floppy they didn't want to get rid of. Mm. It was the worst technology at the time because a lot of viruses were going into those drives because you couldn't really secure them at all. But having said that, you know, we went too fast and we had to go back.
We didn't have the alternative. I mean, in hindsight, flash drives should have been there much earlier. We had USB for a very long time.
Indeed.
Before the podcast, we spoke a little bit about your love for technology.
Mm-hmm.
Do you consider yourself an early adopter?
No, I'm not. I'm fortunate enough that I can use and try technology quite a bit. But I'm not an early adopter in a sense that if I see a new technology out there, I will wait until the second or third version. But it's more to me, I try to think hard enough to see if it's going to help me or not. And if it doesn't help me, then I won't buy it for the sake of getting a gadget out.
Okay, so you don't buy the latest and greatest just because it's the latest and greatest.
No, so I will try it, and I'm lucky enough because I can. But I won't necessarily jump on it until I actually see the full benefit of it.
So what's the best piece of tech you've bought recently?
Well, it's my Garmin watch. Thank you, Garmin.
Which one have you got? The 935?
I'm not exactly sure so which one it is, but it's been a hard... It's been hard for me. I'll tell you why. Is that a lot of watches are specialized in golf.
Yeah.
And a lot of watches are specialized in running. Only a few watches actually specialize in both because it's definitely not the same, usually the same users.
Yeah.
And I remember having a chat with the Garmin marketing manager at Noel in South Africa. And he said, well, we don't have both combined because normally a runner is not a golfer and a golfer is not a runner. Yet the technology was there. GPS is there. Counting your steps is not that difficult. So it took me a while to get to a smartwatch. And the only reason is that because I couldn't find one that would combine the two hobbies that I have.
The two effectively, yeah. That's a 4 and a 30. You got it recently, right? It looks like a 4 and a 30.
Yeah, I think it's about a year and a half now.
Fantastic. So what is your main sport? What is the thing that you track? Do you Strava? Do you Strava at all?
Yeah, I Strava a little bit. I've been forced into doing this. But
if it's not on Strava, it doesn't happen, right?
So I don't share on social media, and I've got no friends when it comes to that.
We can hook up some friends for you. Just let us, just give us your handles, and we'll hook you up with some friends.
I won't do it. But it really, for me, it was, I used to run quite a bit, and I had no idea what was my distance. So I basically had to go and drive my car, my motorbike to see more or less what sort of distance I was doing.
Yeah.
So again, that technology for me actually brought that peace of mind, knowing exactly what sort of mileage I was doing, what sort of time I was doing as well, so that I could prepare a little bit better for races. And the fact as well that I could use that watch after that to find out exactly how far I am from the hole on the golf course.
Yeah.
I thought, well, the two combined was actually perfect. Hence what I actually took it for.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. I mean, I can't imagine doing, I'm a mountain biker, so I can't imagine doing any single cycle without tracking it. Because yes, the data, not, I loved looking at the route, especially if I find something that works well for me. But having all the data, you know, the elevation, the speed.
Yes, that's, it's fun. Important. It's the fun part of your run, or the fun part of your exercise, is at least you can track a little bit what you've done.
And you can see improvement much, much easier.
Yes. Having said that, I've done it recently, which is actually quite fun, is I turn my watch away. And I run freely. I don't look at the speed and I don't look at the distance. So, and what I meant by run freely, i.e., I just don't put music on even, and I just run until I'm tired, and I come back to, and then I look at my distance afterwards. And it's quite, it makes it a little bit easier. Should try.
I've stopped looking at my cycle computer because, you know, I'm not a pro athlete. And if you see 10Ks, but you think you've done 20, that's soul-destroying, you know. So,
fair enough.
But the heart rate, obviously, is very handy.
Yes.
Now, if we look at other technology, are you a home automation fan? Because that is a big thing at the moment.
Not yet, because once again, there's nothing in the automation, home automation, that I believe is groundbreaking, you know.
Nothing.
Knowing that I can switch
standard.
On my lights when I'm 200 meters away from my house doesn't actually make any sort of sense to me. If I was living in Europe, where it's really cold, sometimes in winter, that I can maybe put my heater on.
Preheat the house.
Yes,
yeah.
Before I can arrive home, I'll say, yes, why not, maybe. But I don't see the appeal for now. Mm-hmm. I really don't. So I'm not that excited by it yet. There might be something that comes up, and then I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, this is it. I'm convinced and I'm keen. But that's my approach to technology. If it doesn't help me...
It's a wise way of looking at it. You'll save yourself lots and lots of money. But home automation, I think, is going to become anything that's connected and, you know, the Internet of Things. These are, at the moment, they are kind of not necessities, but they're early adopter toys.
Yes.
But one of these days, they're going to be part of your life. You're going to buy a house, it's going to be in there. It's not going to be a question of, do you want it? It's going to be so entrenched with our lives, I think.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you look at having solar-powered houses, you know, automate your geyser, everything. It's just more efficient once you automate things because it works when it's supposed to be working and doesn't or doesn't draw power. Also gives you information, right? So if you want to see if your kids are at home and all those things, the camera angle, I find it absolutely fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
But I think these things are going to be part of our lives, whether we like it or not.
Yes,
I mean,
absolutely.
In many ways, it's here already. If you look at what your cell phone does, you would have thought 20 years ago that you'll have all this power in your pocket.
5 years ago, even.
Yeah, 5 years ago. Yeah, sure.
Never mind 20 years. No, absolutely. And as I said, I don't resist technology.
Never
My
resist.
My kid right now doesn't even crawl yet, so I don't really need to know when he's arriving home or not, or when at what time is he leaving, for that matter. It might happen in 5 years' time when I said, you know what, it's exactly what I need, because I need to be able to open the door for when I'm at work and he's not, and he doesn't have a key, et cetera, et cetera. Makes sense to me at that time. Let me buy it. Yeah. I was a big fan of the intelligent fridge. That's able to buy what's missing inside the fridge. You see, that for me, I would have bought it right away.
Mm.
Problem is the connectivity in this country and the delivery at home is quite a difficult thing to do.
They never standardized the technology. I mean, it's still, I think, you know, LG did some massive things in that arena.
Mm.
I remember going to the factory many, many, many years ago when they were showing the stuff off with a beautiful large screen. It was fantastic. But now... It's almost doesn't seem practical to have a fridge with that technology in it. You'd rather have a module that plugs into any fridge that gives you that ability.
Yes,
whether it's a sensor, IoT that you put into your fridge.
But then you can imagine that the entire supply chain to try to supply food to your home via an automated order placement was already developed. So somehow the technology might not be exactly what you use it for, but there's a lot of things in the back end that has been developed because of that. And it still is now used in a different way.
But a lot of these...
Not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing, no. But I think that's why we need standards again, because if these companies develop their tech and they develop it in isolation, we've seen it with a lot of these companies, it doesn't chat to anything else. So you have to buy into... And Apple's a great example. You have to buy into the tech, right? You have to have the phone and the notebook and the Apple TV if you want that
experience.
And it works, and it's great if you can do it, but not a lot of people are invested in that. They don't want to get into that.
No, not for sure. So that locked you down a little bit as well. So it's always difficult.
Yeah, for sure.
It's not exactly open...
What about VR? Because that has been one of my favorite topics to talk to. AR and VR, because it's now become a real thing. I mean,
yes,
Pokemon Go was probably the first mainstream implementation of the technology.
Yes.
It might have been a proof of concept for what is possible. You know, it's gamification of a concept. It's very straightforward. But the uptake was absolutely incredible. Now we have dedicated chips that's designed to offset in either a computer or a mobile phone that extra processing power that's needed to do all these cognitive, as they call it, processing. What are your thoughts on that? Because this in a notebook space could also revolutionize the way we do everything.
Yes, I mean, I believe in it from an education point of view as well as anything that has to do with distance learning. So I believe that's super important. Now, I've used technology where you can see what's inside the car, how to fix an engine, how to take parts aside. People explaining to you from miles away what you need to do.
Fantastic. Even surgery's happening from across the country,
even
the
surgery,
world.
And it's actually completely, a lot of people are using it right now, so it works beautifully. From a consumer point of view, I haven't seen anything special right now. And it might turn out to be, that it's going to happen. I know from a Lenovo point of view, for instance, we've got that Jedi's Challenge on the VR, which is apparently amazing. I haven't tried it yet, but I'm super excited because I'm a big Star Wars fan. It looks amazing. But it's still at its infancy, you know. I still believe gaming should have actually be the people jumping all over it.
It is. I mean, if you look at the likes of the HTC Vive, which I'm soon going to be playing with, because that is the first real kind of the thing you can buy for your house. It's still very expensive. You'll probably be, if you don't have a computer, probably close to 120,000 Rand for the entire kit.
Quite prohibitive, yeah.
But the computer is the thing, right? So again, once you have all that processing power into the size of a laptop, that is not... Once computing processing power isn't like the benchmark anymore, it's just the top range that you need it, then everybody's got this technology to run. You know, it'll be the de facto standard, and it'll be much cheaper.
But content is everything there. So you know, we need to have people that actually develop content that people want to watch or that are interested in.
Or play, and games is the perfect vehicle for it.
It is. But
I think as people start spending more money on this, and
and price will start to come down, and we'll get a lot more choice for our bucks. And then you'll see me, and I will talk to you then. I'm using it for that reason exact, and yes, why not? Absolutely.
So on that note of really awesome technology, I thank you very much, Thibaut, for your time.
Welcome.
A little bit of technology. It was actually cool to see this Lenovo. I haven't seen the last one I played with was a bright orange Lenovo. I think it was
There was a 700 or 910.
910, I think it was. Absolutely fantastic. And I certainly look forward to spending some time with one again. Maybe it'll convince me to move away from a Mac. I don't know.
That should be easy enough.
Let's see if the processing power can handle it. Then you've got a challenge on your hands. From Rechard and the Tech Central team, thank you very much for joining us. Thibaut, again, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
We'll be back again in the next episode.
Cheers. Bye.